Hi, can I speak to David, please?
Speaking.
Hi, Mr. David, this is Jeffrey Hill calling.
Oh, sorry, my mind's gone blank. I'm having seen you. Jeffrey, where did we meet?
Well, I had talked to Field McConnell, and you called and left a message to call you and talk to you.
Oh, right.
And,
yeah, I saw some comments by you about Field McConnell being a coward, so I thought I'd call you up and assure you that he's one of the bravest men you might ever wish to meet.
Well, I never called him a coward, actually.
Okay, all right. Well, let's not waste a lot of time there. What's your interest in what Field and I are doing, if you have any?
Well, the things that he says about 9/11 kind of bother me, because I believe that he's intentionally lying about, especially...
Always, if one's thinking about going into a court of law, which is what we're about to do, where would you say he's lying specifically?
Well, he says that Flight 77 that was supposed to hit the Pentagon was blown up over the ocean, and that drones flew into the World Trade Centers.
Right. Now, let's take it one by one. What evidence do you have that 77 went into that building?
Well, I don't believe any plane went into the Pentagon.
Okay, so he's not lying there, then?
He could assume anything he wants about that, but my issue is more with the World Trade Centers.
Yeah, but you got to be very careful when you say that he might be wrong and he might be lying, because if he might be wrong, that would be perhaps a question of fact, that he's got some facts wrong. If he's lying, he's trying to deceive the people he's lying to.
Well, the fact is that the video of the plane going into the World Trade Center is fake.
Right, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you.
Okay, and when I asked him, he said he had no knowledge about video fakery or anything like that.
But he's not an expert on that.
Well, I mean, we've been talking over the emails for months now, and I'm sure he's looked at the video, and I'm sure that he must know they're fake. I don't know why he has a phone.
You think he was lying, right?
Well, I think so.
Well, you think or you are?
That he's lying?
Yeah.
Well, he
has. Are you accusing him of lying, or do you think that you're accusing him of lying?
I'm accusing him of lying, because anybody that looks at the video would see that.
What anyone else does. I mean, specifically, why would he lie? And what evidence do you have that he is lying?
Well, first of all, he lied and said that he had no idea about what I was talking about.
How do you know what he knows about?
Well, because we've been in email.
He knows what you think, but he may not agree with it.
Well, I'd like to know your view on it. Do you think that the video is real of the second plane going into the...
I think they were heavily edited, censored, and modified. Whether that specific point that you make is right, I don't know. But do you know who sponsored the making of those videos?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Do you?
Yeah.
Who is it?
The Noday Brothers.
They sponsored the making of all the different videos?
The two principal ones, which was where the camera was actually locked onto the impact point before the plane hit it on the North Tower, which was for 1.75 seconds, and the camera that was locked onto the impact point on the South Tower for 15 seconds before impact. Those two video teams were sponsored out of Canada through the Demaray family in Montreal that run the power corporation.
Demaray? Or how do you spell that?
Demaray?
No, I've never heard of that name.
Are you in Canada?
Yes.
And have you heard of the power corporation of Montreal?
No. The only names I've ever heard, like in Canada, were the Bronfman family and Maurice Strong.
Well, very good, because the Bronfman family, Charles Bronfman, I think that's the one, he's a Canadian Privy Councillor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was appointed by Mulroney to the Privy Council in 1992 with two other guys, Maurice Strong and Paul Demaray. Right? And Bronfman and the Bronfman family was closely associated with Vivendi, the big entertainment film company, one of whose subsidiaries was Canal, the French company, which sponsored the camera crews that operated the two video teams on the north and the south face of the two buildings that impacted on 9/11. So they were financed effectively through money laundered by the Oil for Food program, through through Maurice Strong, Paul Demmer, and the Bronson family.
Wow, that's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, and they were indebted with the Duane Street Ladder Company, mm-hmm. which took up position and blocked the road prior to the attack as part of a training exercise.
Uh-huh.
So the camera crews had an uninterrupted view of the plane hitting the North Tower, and there's a camera shot you can Google for it, which shows, first of all, it's pointing at...
Well, when you're talking about the second hit?
I'm talking about, well, it's the same, it's the Nodé brothers, they had their cameras pointing at the north face of the North Tower 1.5 seconds or 2 seconds before impact by Flight 177, or allegedly by 177.
175, yeah.
175, that's right. Okay. And about 15 seconds on the south face of the South Tower for Flight 11, right?
Okay, Flight 11 would have been the first one, yeah, and the nod...
Wait, I got the wrong order. 11 and 175 are the two flight numbers, aren't they?
Right. So 11 was the Nodé's are basically...
So they were both, it was both Nodé brothers' camera crews, and they had a camera pointing at the north face of the North Tower, 1.5 seconds before impact, and at the south face of the South Tower, 15 seconds before impact.
So if we take the second hit with Flight 175,
yeah.
I spoke to a gentleman named Luc Korchesny.
Luc Korchesny, you did? Really?
Yeah, he lives in Montreal.
Well, he's the man who was running the camera.
That's what, he admitted.
Nodé brothers.
He admitted that he was running the camera that took the video. And I also talked to Michael Hezarkhani.
Hang on now, I'm very interested. You spoke with Luc Korchesny?
Yes. I have all the phone calls on my website in
really?
The forum.
That's very interesting.
I've talked to Evan Fairbanks. I've talked to everybody.
All right. Well, Luc Korchesny is a very interesting guy, you see, because he was down in New York for a sort of Sonne Lumière event in the plaza of the World Trade Center that was put on by QuebecNewYork.com.
Yeah, it was some awards ceremony or something, yeah.
It was a ceremony, a sort of the Sonne Lumière, and we think that they rigged up the remote detonation sequences for the towers,
mm-hmm.
and he was sent down from Quebec to record the collapse of the towers.
I see.
And that was financed with... money, about $40 million that was put into this Quebec, New York cultural event.
Uh-huh.
So which we think was financed by Desmarais and Maurice Strong through the Canadian Privy Council.
Uh-huh.
So they edited and played around. Have you ever heard of the word entropy? Entropy is a measure of disorder. See, my background is engineering and explosives.
Yes.
And thermodynamics. And in thermodynamics, there's a concept called energy, entropy, which is a measure of the disorder of an object. You know, like a gas is very disordered.
Okay.
But a snow crystal is very ordered, right? So a snow crystal would have a very low entropy, which is characteristic of its shape and its pattern, but a disordered gas, the molecules, would have a very high entropy. Okay, now, what's very interesting we've discovered is that the signature of the criminal perpetrators of 911 with respect to the bodies of the victims, the crime scene, and the story that is spun around afterwards, they're all manipulated to maximize the entropy or the disorder of the evidence to confuse people. So the firefighters' bodies, in some cases, were vaporized.
Mm-hmm.
Crime scenes were cleaned up by union guys, terrified out of their wits, I think, and the mob, and they took the evidence out of the Fresh Kills landfill and shipped the steel off to China and India. And the story that was spread was injected and pre-prepared for the war games that were going on 9-1-1 between Canada and the United States. And the war game were using what are known as virtual news feeds.
Okay.
and the virtual news feeds required camera crews to be in position to inject a virtual story into the people participating in the red team and the blue team sides of the attack, with the red team being Canadian, attacking the United States, which had the blue team defenders in place.
So, am I to understand that the Canadians, you think the Canadians are responsible for 9/11?
A very significant part of it, because if you look at, have you ever looked at the Amalgam Virgo war game of June the 1st?
I heard the name.
Okay, the Amalgam Virgo war game of June the 1st was an exercise between CANAR, which is the Canadian arm of NORAD.
Okay.
And NORAD defenders, the blue team defenders, right? And the script for that war game had a plane being hijacked over Alaska and flown over British Columbia, right near where I am, at the Abbotsford Airport, and then south and then east to target the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. This was an exercise, a war game exercise, where the Canadians had provided the Americans with anti-hijacking technology,
mm-hmm.
so that in the event of a hijacking, a real hijacking, the American defenders would be able to switch out the autopilot, all right, and use an uninterruptible modification to the Boeing flight boxes and land the planes remotely, safely. And that was what was tested on June the 1st. So what they did is they stood down the American defenders in order to test the anti-hijacking technology installed on the plane.
Okay.
That anti-hijacking, it's a fascinating story, was first installed on the Conair planes, the Justice Prison and Alien Transportation System that was launched in October 1995 by Field McConnell's sister, Christine Marcy. And she, wittingly or unwittingly, had modified those planes after a discussion in the late 80s with her brother, Field McConnell. What would happen if prisoners rioted and took control of the plane that was flying them from trials or prisons or whatever and steered the plane into a nuclear power station or a target? And he, Phil McConnell, warned her because she was discussing the idea that the planes could be hijacked electronically and flown remotely, and that would be one way of saving the target and the lives of the people on board. Field warned his sister, probably 20 years ago, that the great danger was that the people who did the electronic hijacking might be the bad guys and fly the plane into a building. She became the head of the Justice Prisoner and Alien Transportation System in October 1995 and appears to have modified a number of planes used to fly prisoners around the United States and abroad with that protection, and then wittingly or unwittingly sold those planes, including Boeing 737, back into the market where they were repainted with American Airlines or United colors and participated in the similar kind of war games on 9/11. In this case, the Canadians jammed the signal from the Americans and flew the planes into the buildings.
So you're thinking that they were modified 737s that were flown into the World Trade Center?
Yep.
And that's not what's depicted on the videos, though, right?
Well, you know, again, I would say you have to discuss with Field McConnell, who's got 23,000 hours of flying planes, including fighter jets. He's the winner of the 1988 William Tell competition. He can recognize the plane by the way it's flying and the maneuvers it executes and the experience of the pilot. While you and I would probably just see it as a dot on the horizon. So when you say someone like him is lying about what he thinks hit the
the video, like Joseph Keith had stated, aluminum planes cannot meld.
I thought we were talking about the kind of planes.
Well, any kind of plane could not just disappear into the steel and concrete structure.
That's a different issue from what it was that hit the structure. And the very important thing is that people in my opinion, they're constantly being distracted because it's not what model hit the building or what the physical impact on that building was. It's the fact that those planes did not execute what are known as check turns. Do you know what a check turn is?
No.
Okay. If you have an inexperienced pilot flying for the first or second or third time in a large passenger jet attempting to hit a target, then they will inevitably have to try and execute a check turn to move the plane in the direction where they want to go. Right? Mm-hmm. A highly experienced pilot like Field McConnell flying an F-4 or an Airbus will hardly exhibit any check turns. It will be a smooth maneuver, right?
Okay.
So, independent of what it was that hit the South Tower, for example, and that was the thing, although I didn't know the phrase check turn back then, when I saw that plane bank at the last second and turn into the tower, as a mechanical engineer with expertise in applied mathematics, I was saying to myself internally, how would someone who was an inexperienced pilot in a large passenger jet do that maneuver so smoothly? After I'd started working with Phil McConnell, the only way you can make those kind of maneuvers, and it's even worse with the trajectory over the Pentagon lawn into the command center, the Naval Command Center in the Pentagon, the only way you can do that without visible check turns is through technology. I.e. a triaxial gyroscope.
But this is where I guess I'm confused. But we're not seeing a realistic, we're seeing a fake video, though.
Okay, but whether it's all fake or only partially fake, most people saw whatever it was that hit the second tower, it did it smoothly.
There's a lot of people. There might be, like Ronald Week says, hundreds of thousands of eyewitnesses, but the actual...
Well, we don't care about what he says. I mean, he's an idiot.
Well, the people that I've talked to, like David Hanshew from the New York Daily American, was standing right there, and he didn't see anything going. He just saw an explosion.
All right. Okay. Again, the issue is not so much what hit the building, right?
Mm-hmm.
How it hit the building, it's the fact is, it killed lots of people.
I understand that, but my whole point is that these videos are showing an unrealistic interaction between an aluminum plane and a steel and concrete building. So anybody that looks at those videos would see that.
What's your background in terms of, I'm not trying to pull stripes or something, but...
No, but I mean just...
Impact of explosives and things?
It's logic. It's just basic.
You worked in the oil industry for many, many years, and I used to build improvised explosive devices to perforate oil wells.
Mm-hmm.
And the bullets that went into the casing and into the rock so that the oil could flow back the other way, they were about, they rather looked like round balls of an aluminum casing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And inside the aluminum was what was called a shaped charge with a copper cone, which is a heavier metal, that when the explosive was ignited, the copper cone would focus a slug of liquidized metal, heavy metal, to punch through the steel. The aluminum would be blown to pieces. I mean, it would just be, almost vaporized, right?
Mm-hmm.
The aluminum was merely the shell to contain the explosive charge.
Okay.
Right, so whatever it was that penetrated the Pentagon or the North and South Tower looks very much like a shaped charge with a liner inside an aluminum shell plane. The aluminum played no part in penetrating the steel. The part that penetrated the steel would have been an extremely hot jet of plasma, a very dense metal, liquidized, alright, that went through the building.
Okay.
So all you would need to do to get that effect is put inside the fuselage of a passenger plane, which was illegally modified, and we know that Boeing was illegally modifying its planes because it paid a $615 million fine to the Department of Justice to drop criminal charges. Right, so really the aluminum shell of the plane was packaging for a very sophisticated, we think, ultra-high temperature incendiary and explosive device.
What about the wings going through the steel and concrete and just disappearing inside?
Well, it looks like this material, this insulation, was included in the wings and the fuel tanks as well. And we've done a forensic analysis of the kinds of incendiaries that could produce that effect. And there's a particular product called Smacksonic or Smectane from Saddam's preferred French weapon supplier called Thales. And the Thales people are on the board with the Bronsons and the Desmarais of Total, the big French company. But this insulation, it's a three-level insulation, and the central component of the plates of the insulation, and incidentally, interestingly enough, it's got aluminum plates. And in between is a viscoelastic material that looks like rocket fuel. And if you ignite by getting a spark across the plates, that rocket fuel, its reaction temperature is 5,800 degrees Fahrenheit, which will vaporize steel.
Okay, that would make sense, yeah.
So if you have that insulation material in the wings, or around the engines, or along the insulation of the fuselage behind the paneling, and you're able to get an ignition system going, and each of those planes, if you look at it as it's either a proximity fuse or an impact fuse, but just as those planes hit the buildings, or what passes the planes is a white flash.
Right.
Which we think is the ignition pulse. And that reaction travels at five times the speed of sound back along the fuselage of the plane. So as it's going into the building, the plane components are going up to 5,800 degrees, and effectively the plane turns into a plasma, which punches a hole through the building. But it does produce that gliding effect, you know, like a knife through butter, with very little kickback of heavy material out into the street.
I see. Well, even where the wings go in, they didn't penetrate the steel. Because if you look at the pictures of the hole after.
No. Well, that again is the, really it depends on the distribution of the temperature profile and the amount of material. You see this insulation I just described, it's about a half a millimeter of rocket fuel between 2 1-millimeter plates. So once that reaction goes, it doesn't last very long. Its prime purpose is to raise the temperature in the vicinity to 5,800 degrees, which vaporizes everything to which it comes into contact, but 1 foot away, the temperature drops back very quickly to ambient. So it doesn't affect the steel.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. I don't really understand a lot of it, but the way you present it sounds, like I said, very interesting.
Well, it's very intriguing. You see, the development of these weapons took place under the Small Business Administration program of the United States, which provided loans to big defense contractors, subcontractors. So Boeing was being forced to take on board small businesses run by women or black or Hispanic or Arab companies in the run-up to 9/11. And these subcontractors were given opportunities to test their weapons during war games, like the one on the 1st and 2nd of June 2001.
Yeah.
And on 9/11 itself. And it would appear Field's sister, fascinatingly enough, Christine Marcy, was in charge of the Small Business Administration program on 9/11, which is why we've filed a lawsuit against her.
And Field has filed a lawsuit against his own sister?
Yeah.
Well.
With about 100 others, including George Bush Sr. and the Clintons. And,
oh, okay, I think I've seen, yeah, there was a whole list somewhere I read of everybody involved, yeah.
And people say, oh, you're right-wing because you haven't taken Cheney out and George Bush Jr., etc. And I said, well, we have actually gone after a number of Republican presidents and candidates, including Giuliani. And we've gone after some Democrats. As far as I'm concerned, we're going after people who caused the wrongful death of nearly 3,000 people on 9/11. Including, I think from memory, 24 Canadians and 60 Brits.
But if you were to, say, go into a court of law, and you showed the judge, like, say, Luke Kershesny's video or Michael Hezekani's video of the plane going into the tower,
yeah.
Wouldn't right there he would see there's a problem?
Because well, you see, again, I'm not an expert at going into a court of law, but what I've decided is that it's extremely difficult to go in and try and prove murder one in a situation where they've got to the evidence and manipulated it. However, it's much easier to go into a court, rather like the family of Nicole Simpson's boyfriend or whatever. They went into court against OJ with a civil claim for wrongful death, which has a lower standard of proof. That's what we're doing with this court case that you've seen, because we think we can demonstrate that there is a racketeering, influence, and corrupt organization engaged in murder for hire, which is responsible for the wrongful death of the 3,000 people on 9/11, and the only thing you have to do then is prove that these key people have a relationship
to
the Rico Enterprise.
Okay.
And then you can nail them under with a civil claim for punitive damages. Now, the defendants have the right to discovery, as we do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when we get into court with the civil claim, what we expect to happen is, well, first of all, they'll be very reluctant to come into court, but we believe that we're getting very close to the point where we could drag them into court whether they want to or not. Particularly with the case filed by Field McConnell yesterday against ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association. Have you seen that? I think I sent it to the...
No, I haven't seen that yet, no.
Okay, well, I sent that to the group that's linked around, what's his name, Ronald Wirk, or whoever he is.
Oh, yeah.
Who I find a disgraceful to humanity. I mean, he's totally abusive. All he can spew is moronic, etc. And I believe his purpose is to get everyone agitated and mad at him and divert attention from a proper forensic analysis of the crime.
Okay, well, but you did say at the start of the conversation that the videos quite possibly could be fake, right?
Well, a lot of adjectives that quite possibly could be, yeah, almost everything could be fake. I do think...
If, well, a normal 767 United Airlines 767 would not be able to just disappear into that steel and concrete structure.
So whatever it was that hit that building, there is something on the video. How much of it is the result of editing and creative work by the studio that put it all together? I don't know. To me, the important thing is not to spend too much time on trying to working out what hit and how it created the damage. It's to get back to the weapons that were necessary to create a disordered crime scene and vaporize the bodies.
And what do you think blew up the towers?
I think these were Special Operation Forces demolition kits developed by the U.S. Department of Defense at Picatinny in New Jersey, which are very light combination incendiaries and explosives, rather like the thermite grenades they used in the Second World War to pop down the barrels of guns. Because what those are, they're not really explosives, they're incendiaries that are very, very hot. And because there's not a percussive seismic signature, they probably didn't use explosives. We think that they used this insulation material I just described. Hmm. And they distributed it in the building inside the freight elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can imagine, I believe a rocket engine can be up to sort of 2 tons, but essentially it's got this fuel in it that produces huge amounts of water vapor and I think carbon dioxide and various other gases as propellant. But the temperature is around 5,800 degrees Fahrenheit. So you imagine if you have some elevators, and that would be very easy to do, you go into the basement. Remember, they tried to knock out the World Trade Centers in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
You go into the basement and you put a rocket motor inside the elevator. The freight elevator, I got a carrying capacity probably of 10 tons. It goes all the way, some of the elevators go all the way out to the windows of the World Restaurant at the top. And you run the elevators up to the points where you want to stage the demolition sequence. And then you ignite the rocket motor inside the elevator shaft. You get a temperature of 5,800 degrees. That vaporizes the steel columns on the inner core.
That's interesting.
Now, how long would it, people say, oh, it would take days or weeks to rig it up. Well, it wouldn't. You just bring in a couple of van loads of the rocket fuel and the rocket engines. You go into various elevators. You distribute them up and down the buildings at various key points. Then you have a timing sequence, rather like a fireworks display. And then you can create a top-down demolition effect or a bottom-up, like in building number 7.
Mm-hmm.
Building number 7, if you look at the demolition, right, the top part of it is intact. It's melting from the bottom. So I think they ignited the rocket motors in the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And then, they brought it down in its own footprint. Well, I don't know if you... I've written about that, but I was on Scholars for 911 Truth, and Jim Fetzer kicked me off when I discovered that building number 7 had been owned, the mortgage on building number 7 had been owned by Jim Fetzer's pension fund.
Oh, I remember reading something about that.
Right, they sold it, the teacher's pension fund, it's the biggest private pension fund in the world. They sold the mortgage to the Blackstone Private Equity Group in October of 2000.
But
my research indicates that the teachers, insiders, possibly including Fetzer and the Blackstone Private Equity Group, then doubled up the insurance on the mortgage.
But the pension fund would be for all teachers across America, no?
Yeah, well, the pension fund is not a monolith, so it's broken up into lots of different investment structures. So if you're an insider, you might specialize with the teachers in investments in real estate. Right?
Hmm.
So I said, to Jim Fetzer, and he chose to accuse me of accusing him of being responsible for 911, which wasn't my point. I said, you have a conflict of interest, which you should declare on the website, that your pension fund was an investor in the mortgage and apparently in the doubled-up insurance, which generated $400 million of profit to be distributed by the Blackstone Private Equity Group amongst its investors. And he said, oh, you're accusing me of 911, you see, which is the typical straw man argument. I'm not accusing him of being responsible for 911. I'm accusing him of being in a perceived conflict of interest, which he should declare.
Well, so you just wanted him to show that information on his website or something?
Well, yeah, because he's sounding off about Bush did it. And I'm saying, well, if you want to put some motives together, it would be an interesting motive for an awful lot of teachers who are retiring to invest in the insured mortgage of building number 7. And then when it was knocked down, they'd have their pensions.
Mm-hmm. what I don't understand. So, like, was every teacher in America benefiting off
WT7? Well, the point is, the rank and file would never clue. I mean, if you ask most people about what's being done with their pension funds, they don't know.
But he was aware of what was going on, and he refused to...
Well, he had set up a website, a very elaborate website, called Scholars for Knowing One Truth,
mm-hmm.
where he was claiming to invest, and when he invited me to join, I thought, scholar, well, that's a nice compliment. Truth, I thought that was an important word. 911, I was very interested, so I accepted in good faith. And then I found out that that website was being manipulated, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah?
Well, manipulated in the sense that I think it's an interesting fact if you go into a court to find out that the teacher's pension fund, because do you know the most powerful director of Boeing on 911 was the chairman of its audit committee? Right? The chairman of its audit committee on 911 was a guy called John Biggs, who happens to be the chairman of the teacher's pension fund.
Hmm.
As I pointed out, etc. And I said, well, that's interesting in court, that you've got a director of the Boeing company whose assets were hammered on the stock market and in the real world on 911 that is in charge of the audit committee, which was responsible for installing illegal military gyroscopes on planes that were shipped to China, for which Boeing paid $650 million.
Hmm.
That would allow you to fly a plane like they were flown on 911. Without using low-time pilots who couldn't fly the planes as they were flown on 911. They
right.
got pissed off and booted me in.
So you agree that these so-called hijackers couldn't have did what they did in those planes? No.
They couldn't have flown the planes along those check turn-free trajectories.
Right.
Required to execute, for example, the maneuver that took out the U.S. Naval Command Center, the Pentagon, whatever it was, let's not get tied up, it came from 7,000 feet down to ground zero, a tight bank turn, 270 degrees, at 540 miles an hour, went through the first floor window of that building, and most people are not interested in what it was on the other side of that window. Do you know what it was?
What do you mean?
Well, the plane that hit the Pentagon, or the thing that hit the Pentagon, took out a strategic target. Do you know what that strategic target was?
Like the section where they were auditing?
Wedge 1.
Hmm?
It wasn't the audit, it was the U.S. Naval Command Center.
I thought they hit the place where the whole $2.3 trillion missing was being audited.
That's a distraction. They hit the U.S. Naval Command Center and they killed the duty officer, who was about to commission the U.S. Naval Command Center that morning.
Hmm.
And the U.S. Naval Command Center was responsible for linking the President of the United States with U.S. naval assets around the world. And while that was being constructed in Wedge 1, the communications with the U.S. naval assets around the world was handled through the Naval Coordination Center on the island of Hawaii, which commands it to this day. And that Naval Command Center, or the Iridium Communication System, satellite communication systems with U.S. naval assets, is provided by General Dynamics of Canada.
General Dynamics of Canada?
Correct.
So there's a lot of interest
in Chicago is a guy called Lester Crown, who's on the board of directors of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs with one Michelle Obama.
Oh, yeah? Barack Obama's wife?
Yep.
In the Council of Foreign Relations?
No. Well, they were the Council of Foreign Relations in Chicago. They changed their name to the Council on Global Affairs.
Oh.
And Barack Obama's wife is a director.
Wow.
And her friend, and I'm not making this up, whose name is Leo Zellwanger, is the treasurer and the president of the hedge fund called the Lizard Hedge Fund. embargo and made or helped to make the Obamas and their friends about $1 trillion of profits by shorting the New York stock market. This is the Chicago way that goes back to Al Capone and the Bronsons. And Barack Obama is owned by the mob in Chicago.
That's where he lived before or something?
He was a community organizer and he married them.
Some shady real estate deals or something like that?
Absolutely.
Wow, it seems like there's a lot of stuff in Canada that's a lot of stuff to uncover in Canada too then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I never really hear much about anything from Canada.
Now, Canada pretends to be lily white, but it's... I came here in 92 after working around the world. I smelt something very weird, and eventually I concluded that this is one of the most corrupt jurisdictions in the world. And about 4 weeks ago here in BC, the BBC had done an article and concluded that British Columbia has the highest concentration of organized crime groups in the world.
In BC?
Yep.
Wow.
$6 billion marijuana trade.
Wow. That's interesting.
And when they passed the anti-racketeering statute in the States in 1970, you know, to take out people like Jimmy Hoffa and although he, I think, disappeared by then. The mob came north. They set up in Quebec and Ontario and British Columbia, out of reach of the anti-racketeering statute in America.
Is that true?
Canada, in my opinion, provided the base for the attack on 911.
Through CANAR, whatever you said?
Canadian arm of NORAD.
Yeah, like NORAD's dissolved now, right? And it's called NORCOM?
No, it's still there, but it's highly confused, you see, because another way of looking at those war games of June the 1st and 9/11 was Bombardier and NATO was the red attack team to test the NORAD and Boeing defenses. And the big mistake strategically, of course, of America and Canada, for that matter, the legitimate people, was to get in the habit of having two big war games a year. So, from the terrorist point of view, they saw a wonderful opportunity inside a war game to change the script.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone is doing something that they wouldn't normally do during the war game.
Right.
Not expecting the other side will finish the war game, which they are normally supposed to do by turning around and going home, and then they work out who won. But on the morning of 9/11, the red attack team didn't turn around and go home.
They actually carried out a real operation.
Exactly. And of course, and then everything was confused.
And that would be, would that be tied in with the tripod?
Yes.
Tripod 2 war?
There's a whole bunch of exercises going on simultaneously. And afterwards you hear a question asked, well, who was the war game maestro?
Mm-hmm.
Ever heard that question?
No.
Who had the overall coordination authority for the war game?
Mm-hmm.
I think we now know who had that coordination. It was KPMG, the big accounting firm.
KPMG? Wow.
Have you heard of them?
I've heard of them, yeah.
It's the world's biggest accounting firm. That one of its services is called an escrow service, where it takes money from one party and the contract specifications from another party, and it handles the completion of a contract, a bit like a mortgage on a house.
Mm-hmm.
So it does the paying, and it sends people to monitor the progress of the project. So you see, and we think it had escrow responsibility for that war game. So it had an insider position on the red team and the blue team, and the ability to switch.
Interesting. interesting. I guess I'm going to have to do a lot more reading.
Have you read our, have you seen our DVDs?
No.
Are you near your computer?
No, actually.
Okay, when you go to CaptainSherlock.com, right?
Yeah.
And on the bottom right-hand side, you'll see the 911 Resolution Trilogy. It's three DVDs that we've done, Pattern of the Times, Pattern of the Crimes, and Pattern of the Signs. They're each about 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
And if you look at that, well, you'll get our view of what happened on 911.
Okay. But, like, getting back to the video one more time of the second plane, you agree that Flight 175, a normal United Airlines Boeing 767, could not have just melded into the tower like that, right?
Any plane that was carrying the explosives and incendiaries that I just described,
right,
would create the impression that it had glided through the target. Because on ignition, the incendiaries go up to 5,800 degrees, which is hot enough to vaporize steel.
Well, that's kind of like where Lawson was saying something about depleted uranium dipped plane to be able to go through the steel and concrete.
Well, the depleted uranium would be used because it's very heavy,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't create the temperature effect that we saw, which included vaporization of evidence. And when I say vaporization, what I really mean, it's even hotter than that. It's not vapor. You actually get it turned into a plasma. It's so hot. A plasma is positive and negatively charged particles.
Mm-hmm.
They just drift away, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a characteristic of a plasma is very high energy, broadband electromagnetic pulses. So what you'll see if you've got a plasma is the light dip. You know, because it gets coupled into the light system. So, for example, when you look at the camera that shows the object moving across the Pentagon lawn into the tower, into the Pentagon.
Yeah.
About, I think from memory, 1.5 to 2, might be 6 seconds in, the screen almost goes completely white.
Yeah.
And that's a characteristic of a very strong electromagnetic pulse.
Okay.
The people at Indian Lake under the path of United 93 said that the light dimmed. And
yeah,
the power.
You could see also on Evan Fairbanks' video that the lights go out.
Well, that would be a characteristic of a very high energy electromagnetic pulse consistent with a plasma.
And in all locations, cell phones weren't working either.
Well, yes, they were knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that requires a very energetic source consistent with this rocket motor insulation technology developed by Saddam weapons manufacturer, French company Tahoe. Hmm.
Saddam Hussein?
Saddam Hussein, he controlled the UN oil for food money, which was the greatest financial rip-off in the history of the world. That was designed by Maurice Strong. And the money was laundered through Paribas in New York and then funded the development of these very exotic weapons that we think were used on 911.
Hmm.
So Saddam was too smart. He didn't actually develop his weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He developed them in Canada and France.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, well, I'll check out your website, and thanks for all the information.
Oh, pleasure. And what was your name again?
Jeffrey Hill.
Jeffrey Hill, okay. Jeffrey, sorry if I was a bit abrupt, you know, but I try not to use the word liar and moron and everything else and insult people.
The fact still remains, though, an aluminum plane can't just meld into a steel and concrete.
I'm quite happy to discuss facts, but I don't like being called, you know, by someone met this guy, who I think he calls himself the American thinker or whatever, this guy, Ronald Wirk. So sometimes I wonder, is it worth engaging in conversation with people like that?
Right.
And then occasionally I'm tempted to hop back in and just see if I can insert what I'd believe to be facts. But on the whole, I only insult people who insult me. And I think I sometimes kick myself because I'm thinking I'm, you know, being childish.
Well, myself, I just, anybody that says a plane could go into the building the way it's shown in the videos, I would call him a liar.
Well, that's your privilege, but I wouldn't use those words myself.
Right, but we agree that those videos are unrealistic, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, you take care, and thank you very much for your time.
Okay, pleasure, Jeremy. Bye.